Good morning, everybody. I reopen our session this week, and we're going to start with IAS 28.
Yes, please.
Kazu.
Hi. Good morning, everybody. This is Agenda Paper 10. This issue is about how an investor should account for its share of the changes in the net assets of the associate or joint venture that are not recognized in profit or loss or OCI of the associate. Such changes are called other net asset changes in this paper. At the June meeting, the ISV disagreed with the committee's proposal because it would not address all types of other net asset changes, in particular share-based payment transactions. And also, the proposed accounting did not provide a symmetry between a reduction and an increase in the investor's share ownership interest. The ISV asked the staff to bring back an analysis for three views, equity, OCI, or profit or loss, in terms of where an investor could recognize other net asset changes. The staff recommend view one, investor's equity, for two reasons. First, we think it is natural and intuitive to recognize associates other net asset changes in the investor's equity. Secondly, IAS 28 prior to the revision in 2011 required this kind of changes to be recognized in equity, but it is currently unclear because of the revision. Going back to what it was in the past is the most reasonable approach as a short-term solution to address diversity in practice. Just clarification, I have included an appendix to show how journal entries would work for each view. And in some examples, there are two entries for one transaction. That's because I split into two to explain the economic impact, but in practice, it should be just one net entry. And also, there are six examples in the appendix, but you may notice that there are eight in the paper for the June meeting. That is because there were several share-based payment examples that the entries would be the same. So I decided to avoid such duplicates. And one more note I would like to make is it has been brought to my attention that in practice, gains or losses on disposals of the investor's share ownership interest are recognized in profit or loss, as opposed to equity. Having said that, if we want to maintain the current practice of recognizing deemed disposal in profit or loss, it would not provide symmetry between a reduction and an increase. That is against what the ISB preferred at the previous meeting. The question for the ISB is, do you agree with the staff recommendation? If you do, I would like to discuss other questions, such as if this should be a separate amendment or not.
I open the floor. Mr. Pector.
I support the staff recommendation. We talked at the last meeting that IFRS is not as clear as U.S. GAAP about the underlying principle of the equity method, but I think we agreed at the last meeting that it is a one-line, the result should be similar to a one-line consolidation. And I think the staff recommendation is the recommendation that is consistent with the one-line consolidation. We ought to just decide on the concept, and I thought we did last month for the share-based payment and other things, and I would follow that here. I know the U.S. practice is to recognize a gain on these, quote, deemed disposals, which is you're not disposing of anything. You're just your investment goes down because somebody else got some investment, and so your percent is down. The reason FASB does it, in my recollection in U.S. history, is 20 or 25 years ago, the SEC said, we will take it either way. We'll treat it either equity or P&L. And companies preferred P&L, and that the practice has developed that way in the U.S. But I think the staff's answer is the right one. I would do the answer to your second part. I would do it the most expeditious way. If separate ED is quicker, I would do it that way. If part of annual improvements is quicker, I would do it that way. I don't think it's a big deal. Excuse me.
Tricia?
I support the staff's recommendation for all the reasons that Paul gave, but I do think we need to do this as a separate, standalone amendment, because it will change practice. So a lot of people are going to think it's a big deal. So I think we do need to do it as a separate.
To save us, Paul.
I didn't care. Philippe?
Well, to start with the process, I think we need to have a separate amendment. It is a significant issue. We change practice, possibly. I'm a bit disappointed that we would adopt a solution which would, in fact, diverge from the current practice in the U.S. It's not a convergence project, but here we would diverge from practice, I understand. I don't have strong views on what is the best answer. I feel a bit uncomfortable with having that specific type of so-called transaction. Actually, there is no transaction. There is the associate is transacting with other parties, and you have the result of those transactions which are external to the group. But they are not transactions per se. The investor is doing nothing. I'm a bit uncomfortable with that having an effect on equity. We have tried with IS1, as we changed it, to protect equity of the investor and to restrict the movements in equity with only transactions with shareholders of the investors in their capacity as shareholders. That would be an exception to this principle. If we start doing an exception, I'm not sure where we stop with exceptions. I would prefer not to have exceptions, which for me would mean that either OCI or profit and loss would be the correct answer if it is not equity. Profit and loss would be consistent with the practice in the U.S. It would be probably consistent with some of the practice which has developed over there on our side. I don't have strong views between OCI and profit and loss. I don't think profit and loss is the best answer because it's not the performance of the investor. Investor is doing nothing, so why should this consolidated profit and loss reflect any impact of something he has not done? So we are left with equity. OCI. So OCI, we don't know exactly what's the meaning of OCI these days. So we tend to dump more and more things in OCI. One more. It's probably not ideal. But equity, to me, is not the best answer because I think we should protect our principle of only transactions with shareholders, investors in the parent company. And that's all. But I'm not going to die in a ditch for whichever. But anyway, I think it's a separate project. It's not an annual improvement.
Yes, please go.
Can I just clarify, Philippe? Are you just saying for deemed disposals, you don't want it through equity, or are you saying everything shouldn't be through equity?
I think nothing would go to equity.
Okay.
Nothing would go to equity of those transactions. Dilution or relution, where the investor is passive and as a result of those dilutions, relutions, could go to profit and loss, although it's a passive activity, it's not an active activity. Does it represent performance or not? It's difficult to know whether there has been any management decision, in fact. You don't control the investee, you have only influence. So whenever the investee is doing something, you cannot prevent it, or you cannot impose it, you cannot control it. So the result of that thing being done by the investee, is it performance or not? If you can't control it, you can say it's not my performance. Still, it is something which happens. You don't have control of it, but it has an impact on your situation. So it might go to profit and loss because of that. Some things happen to companies, they don't control it, they can go to profit and loss. An exchange rate movement
A lot of things that companies cannot control.
Yeah, so it's not really going. Now, we don't know exactly what's the difference between OCI and profit and loss. We have not developed our rationale, so whether it's OCI or profit and loss, I don't know, because we need to do some work conceptually to know which one is best in this case. But certainly not equity.
Tuck.
Yes. The first? Me.
Yes, Tuck.
All right, okay. I disagree with the staff's recommendation. I prefer view three. Everything should be recognized through profit or loss rather than equity. I have many reasons to object to record it as an equity. The first reason is this is not the transaction with the owner of the consolidated financial group, and transaction other than owner should not be recorded as an equity of the financial statement, consolidated financial statements. And that is the one of the biggest reason. And second reason is, although Paul said that we have agreed that this equity method is a one-line consolidation, I don't think we have agreed in June's meeting. At least I disagree. Equity pickup is a one-line consolidation. Most part of the equity method is a one-line consolidation. On that part, I agree. But if you have a transaction with the owners of associates, which is the equity transaction of the associate itself, then in that case, one-line consolidation would not work. Because if you translate it as if the transaction with the owners of the consolidated financial group, you have to recognize cash as well on the debit side of the consolidated financial statement. But in the case of one-line consolidation, cash goes to the associates. It will not be picked up, escalated to the financial statement of consolidated financial statements. In my understanding of one-line consolidation is to measure the subsequent change after the first injection of the capital. That is, every time you start the business, the first debit entry and the credit entry would be debit cash, credit equity. Then that company will make operation afterwards. So one-line consolidation can pick up everything, what happened to that associate company, to the one-line as a one-line consolidation. But if there is a transaction which relate to the equity itself, then one-line consolidation would not work. That is my understanding of one-line consolidation. I may be wrong, but this should be discussed more within the board. And I have one question to the staff. Do you want to change some part of IFRS 10 as well or not? Because my concern is about the IS 10, paragraph 25. It talks about loss of control. And according to IFRS 10, paragraph 25C, which is the 378 of volume. It says, when you lose control, you have to recognize the gain or loss. And suppose if there is a case that your subsidiary, 100-owned subsidiary, made a huge dilution offering, and equity size became five times, then your ownership would reduce from 100% to 20%. And then in that case, that company still associates. Then in my understanding, in my interpretation, IFRS 10 is requiring to recognize profit or loss. Then suppose if I'm wrong, please correct me, but if that entity made a transaction two-step, they have 100% in the first place, then it reduced to, the say, 49%. And then it reduced to 20%. So in that case, finally, the ownership come down from 100% to 20%. But our first part would be recognized equity. And then the first part would be recognized as profit or loss. And then second part would be recognized as equity. So then there is a big difference if we did it one time and if it did it to two-step basis. So I would like to ask the staff, are you happy with this kind of consequence?
I think I'd say that I think we've got guidance in IFRS 10 about looking at whether transactions are linked. And so if those two transactions were linked, I would look at them together and therefore take it as one single transaction. But no, you had asked if we were proposing to change IFRS 10. The answer is no. IFRS 10 deals, I think, quite clearly with loss of control. And what we're dealing with here is only where you've got significant influence and you retain significant influence. It's just that there is a change in the equity of the associate itself.
But Tuck's point would stay if, say, the transactions were 6 or 12 months apart. You know, first step was now, and the next step was 6 months later, then you would have a...
Then those are independent transactions. I would account for
so
each one.
So you couldn't link them?
No.
Then the outcome is quite different. Am I correct?
Yes, because in my opinion, you'd be reflecting different transactions.
PK?
Kaju and Michael, thank you for taking this board's input from last month and revising into a new paper. I completely agree with the staff's recommendation of sticking with the OCI connection. I want to ask, it may not be needed to discuss right now, but when you're drafting the exposure draft, you might want to think about situations wherein, of the six situations that Kaju mentioned, that I would think that more than four of the situations would pose the question, what happens when the investment is indirectly reduced at a later date? Like you sell that investment or something like that. What do you do with that? I think you need to link that with the Para 25 of IAS 28 and see how you will answer that, because that's a very common question that's going to come up.
PK, sorry, just for clarification, you said OCI, but they're recommending equity, I think.
I'm sorry, equity. Equity, but thanks for pointing out. But when there's a sale, if it's equity, you need to think about what happens to the gain recognition. I don't want to confuse the board members with the numbers, but I do have the examples to show that it'll throw up unnecessary, unsensible answers or insensible answers. But you need to link that to Para 25 to say why you don't think the gain can be recycled into the income statement, because this is an equity. Para 25 talks about OCI. So I think you need to answer that, because I think there will be several questions coming out of the exposure draft, and we can preempt it to say what is a board's decision on that.
So that's the issue. We've got the guidance in IAS 28 that talks about recycling out of OCI. Your point is we're now putting things into equity. Should we or should we not be recycling out of equity into P&L?
Yeah, exactly. And so, because I think Paul mentioned about the SEC guidance. It's the SAB 51 which talks about it. And my personal practice is that most people take it to equity rather than to income statement, but I don't have any basis to counter Paul's comment, because I have done at least 10 or 12 IPOs, and everybody took a conscious decision not to take it to income statement but take it to equity, okay, because they didn't want to deal with losses down the road. So it works both ways. But here, what I want to mention to you is that whilst you're doing that, most of the time in the practice, the situation will come up, what do you do when there's an ultimate sale? The amount is stuck in the OCI, in the equity, sorry. The amount is stuck in only equity, and it never gets reversed. Okay, so you need to answer that. And some tax implications are going to come up in the comment letter, but we've got to deal with it at that stage. But thank you for taking care of it.
Tricia, again?
I think for those that are uncomfortable with these transactions going through equity, it's useful to think about the history of the equity method. My understanding of the history, I'm not quite that old, but before AP 18.
Nobody accused you.
The equity method did exist. And my understanding was that it developed because in the U.S. there was an exception to consolidation for even wholly owned non-homogeneous entities. And because of the ability to manipulate income, if you weren't consolidating a wholly owned subsidiary, they developed the equity method. So they would account for that wholly owned subsidiary on the equity method so that the net income was the same whether they consolidated or not. And that's how it developed. And then there were abuses because people said they found some friendly person to hold 51%. And they had 49, and they were still effectively controlling and manipulating their income by using their significant influence to have the entity declare dividends when they wanted to have income and not declare them, and they could keep the losses out of consolidated net income. And so to eliminate those abuses, they extended the use of the equity method to entities that had significant influence. And unfortunately, because the U.S. is the U.S., they had to put in a bright line, and they took it all the way down to 20%. So you might argue that at 20%, it's hard to argue that they have enough significant influence to really manipulate the consolidated entity's results. At 49, depending on who owns the other 51, and that's how the IASB eventually went to a model where you didn't have to own more than 51% to have control. You looked at the actual parameters. But the history of the equity method, I think, is pretty clear that you should have the same equity and profit and loss that you would have had you consolidated that entity. So that's the history of it. And as far as whether we should put the, if you didn't put them through equity, putting them through P&L or OCI, I think we can't answer that question, and we shouldn't answer that question until we've really addressed what is performance and what do we mean by OCI. And therefore, I think we should leave the equity method pure as a one-line consolidation until we answer these other questions.
So you favor going into equity?
I favor the staff's position, yes.
Thank you for this historical overview. But Tak wanted to come back, and then you, Vego.
Thank you, Patrice. Pat, and this is very informative and educational. But still, I don't think it is true in the case of equity transaction happened on the associates company. This is true. What you said is exactly true when there is a transaction on the ordinary transaction with the non-owner transaction. This is true, but this wouldn't be true in case of transaction with owner of the associates. That's one point. The other point I would like to raise is about whether the transaction is passive or not, and which is raised by Philip. I think if associates made a dilution or offering, this is a passive transaction to the parents, because parents cannot control. And then the question is that fair to recognize profit, what happened at the associates? But suppose if you own the non-listed company, which is 19%, and you do not pick up through the equity method, in that case, you have to go to IFRS 9. And according to the IFRS 9, you have to measure fair value through peer profit or loss. And then if the company who you own 90% made a big public offering and gained a huge amount of cash, and the equity became five times bigger than before. Obviously, in that case, you would recognize profit because the fair value of that company should have been increased. Then compared to that transaction,
maybe not.
Of course, when you measure, it could have been measured fair value basis. But so I understand your point. But anyway, it has been recognized through profit loss, no matter when.
Tak, your problem should be solved with stock-based compensation. Once your profit and loss account works for the stock-based compensation, I have sympathy for your situation, and I have sympathy. But the problem comes is when the rubber hits the road is in the stock-based compensation. And it's a very common situation to have stock-based compensation, and the equity investor will recognize zero for the stock-based compensation. And tell me, how is that logical? That I agree with you, putting it in equity doesn't really taste good, but in all the other alternatives really reek.
But in case
of... Think about that, and if you can answer that, I'm willing to change my vote to, vote with you.
Let me quickly address your question. In case stock-based, share-based payment, you're talking about share-based payment?
Yeah.
And so suppose the employee of the that company receive share-based payment, and then in equity, in the book of the associate, you recognize profit and recognize expense of salary, and equity on the creditor side. And then if you recognize profit on this, then expense and profit will be offsetted. Eventually, you would recognize no profit or loss. And you think it's a problem. But suppose if you pay salary in cash in the associate's company.
It won't be an issue.
Yeah.
In a salary, it won't be an issue because the corresponding entry is not to the equity.
No. Let me finish. Suppose if you pay cash to your employee, and that employee made a capital injection. So if you made a public offering to those employees, and the employee bought that that share by cash, in that case, this is two transactions. One is expense and the cash. And then the other transaction would be cash and equity. And if you have two transactions, one is simple salary payment. The other is just dilution. And then if you could recognize expense, and here is the dilution, that is the deemed sales of shares, and recognize profit.
But Taka, I think in these examples, the employees is independent investors as any other investors.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so there's no problem, you know.
Yeah, so then, but the transaction of share-based payment is something like that, because... of course, but
Shareholders go to the market, the employees go to the market to
buy all companies'
shares, quite often the case. But there's no problem.
But after the exercise, it's all same.
Right. They're different.
In substance.
Waco.
Now, my position is in between the pure equity and the, we call in U.S. terms, you know, the changes in equities other than, you know, owner's transaction. I think Parker's concern is, my understanding is mixed, two different kind of transactions. One is purely, you know, the owner's transactions with the investees. Another transaction is, you know, the transactions may not be with owners. And I would be in between, you know, pure owner's transactions and with the investees, owners, and other transactions, and not for the profit loss. And I will be very interesting possible answers from Michael about the PK's questions about recycling. You know, do you have any ideas, you know, on this, on his question?
Well, are you asking me if I think we should require recycling or we should prohibit recycling of equity items? And that's something that we've not gone into in the paper.
Yes, yes, but he raised the issue, raised
yes.
the question.
Yes, as something to perhaps raise in the development of the exposure draft. Yeah.
But do you have any preliminary views on this?
Not necessary at this point. No. Do you?
Not to share right now. I'd need to sort of think them through a little further.
Could I understand the question? If they chose the OCI alternative, would there be recycling? Is that what your question is?
No.
But maybe not OCI. They call the other terms, you know.
Well, what's the question?
I think Wei Guo was asking about the point that PK had raised, which is if we are saying that the share of the associate's equity, we're going to include this in the investor's equity, then when the investor disposes of the associate, should we recycle those equity components into P&L to come up with the overall gain or loss on disposal?
If it is OCI, the Para 25 takes care of it. If it's equity, the Para 25 does not take care of it. That's why we need to answer it, because that's a question. It's inevitable that somebody's going to ask us.
Maru? Well, first, I would like to remind this is proposed as a short-term solution. So the concept of short-term here is not very clear to me. And why I say that, because we are assuming in the paper that our decision on to take on board the equity method of accounting in the near term could take care of this. I don't foresee that in our previous discussion on the equity method, so I would like staff to comment on that, this first question. Regarding alternatives, the discussion so far has shown that there is no ideal place. In equity, it's not really in line with what we have in the concept of equity in our conceptual framework. We could find some alignment with the wording, the conceptual framework, that equity is dependent upon the measurement of assets and liabilities, and thus, if I consider this as an adjustment to my asset, I would accept inequity. I guess in P&L, it's a little bit worse because the conceptual framework limits somewhat to expenses and income and could bring some noise to the performance of that entity in that period. So depends on the amount of the adjustment, this could provide some different figures. There's another point that was already raised. We intend to discuss in the near future or in the future what the performance means for us. And this will impact directly the OCI proposal here as well. So we have three alternatives. None of them there are ideal. Looking at them and trying to have the best, considering what we have in the conceptual framework as it is today, and expecting some additional disclosure with that. Disclosure is not mentioned in the paper, but I guess we'll have some. And aware that I do not foresee this specific case being discussed in the equity method project. I think the alternative for short term, as proposed now, the least worse is equity. So I agree with staff on that, under these grounds. Although I'm very sympathetic to the arguments that we should
somewhat limit equity to transactions with shareholders. But I think this is the least damaged alternative at this point.
In terms of the if this is a short-term solution or not, frankly speaking, I'm not sure if equity method accounting will be discussed in the short term or not, frankly speaking. But the committee has been discussing this issue for over 1 year, and we brought this issue twice to this board meeting. And it is true there is diversity in practice, so we need to address something. And as I mentioned, you know, IAS 28 before the revision required equity recognition. So I think it is pretty natural to go back to the past before discussing the detail we could mess with accounting.
And disclosure, that you don't mention the paper?
Which we need to consider in the process of vote, yes.
Ian, then I think we're going to reach a conclusion.
Yeah, I think it's been a very good debate, and I've been persuaded one way and another as the debate's going on. I like Tech's point about consistency with consolidation. I think conceptually, Amara, I think it would go through profit and loss, actually. But we don't, I think Pat's point, we haven't considered performance.
Yeah,
and what's profit and loss and what's OCI. So I've come back to where I started, and I agree with you. I think the least worst is equity in the meantime.
So can I see who can support the staff's proposal? And I think the general, what I sense is people think it should be probably a separate ED, right? Who is in support of that?
13.
except for the small island. Support.
Hans, will you ask the staff further explore the recycle issue or not? In this case.
The staff can explore what they want.
Whether we want them to do so, you see.
I'm not sure.
Well, it depends how quickly we want to take this forward. And also...
And there is urgency.
There is diversity in practice. And so the sooner that we're able to publish an exposure draft, the sooner we'll be able to make an amendment. We could, if you wanted to put in a question about recycling, and ask people's views on that, say that we're not proposing to require recycling, but what do constituents think?
Yes. I think the analogy that PK highlighted and brought to our attention is sound, and I think it should at least be raised as a question. And I frankly agree with his analysis, and the analogy in paragraph 25, I think is sufficiently on point. So I think we'd be kind of remiss not to address it, at least ask a question.
So are you coming back with any disclosures? Because that's going to obviously delay it till September. Is there any issue of that?
We haven't planned to do that. There is, IS1 does require you in your statement of changes in equity to set out what those movements are. So our intention wasn't to propose any additional disclosures on top of that.
I think they should be just explaining the basis. And the other thing I hear, I think, is that this is not something we're going to argue on conceptual grounds. This is more of a pragmatic solution. And I don't hear a consensus that this is clearly the right conceptual answers. It's dealing with a practical solution. I think that's important that we don't end up creating something that we will analogize to later on.
I think we should avoid the recycling question. I think we have a quick fix of something we need to fix. And once we open up this question about what to recycle and when and how, I think we are opening a big, big, big can of nasty worms.
And you can do that if you say this is a pragmatic solution. If you say no recycling, then you've got consistency anyway within this frame of transactions. And state that this is not setting a precedent, but you can state that in the basis as well.
I think this is a good conclusion. Okay. Enough guidance for the staff?
Yes.
Thank you. Okay, we are now
starting with an educational session
we're used to.
On revenue recognition. We wait for the staff to enter.
Yeah, it's very similar. It's right. I think I get the high standards.